The views and opinions expressed on this show are purely the views and opinions of the person who made them, and do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the show's commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. As the restriction on our God-given right to free speech manifests itself throughout the world, we are inspired by Jesus Christ's immortal words, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And we reserve the rights to all our words. Thank you, and now enjoy the show.
To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you're not allowed to criticise. You are listening to ACH, I'm Andy, your host. And on today's instalment of I'm Talking To You, originally recorded and broadcast on Thursday, June the 11th, 2026, at achshow.com, I will be presenting a show entitled Frank Morris, John Anglin and Clarence Anglin Escaped from Alcatraz 64 Years Ago Today. And the time is 8:01 over here in London, England, AM, and it is nice to be talking to you again. For those of you who've listened to the I'm Talking To You show, especially when it was going out on a Saturday, I used to have a show title of an anniversary of event on that day, and it was great if you could find a 100-year anniversary, something like that. And I'd have that as a show title, and I would never talk about it. It was just a quirk of the show. That's what I've done today. So 64 years ago today, that was the events that inspired the film Escape from Alcatraz. Now, I've heard numerous documentaries on the escape. There's a good one that was part of the Hard Time box set, which was... all the others were narrated by Paul Savino in that DVD box set on prisons. This one wasn't. It was sort of like an anomaly in the group. It was still interesting, though. And there are some people who think that they survived and some people that think that they drowned. But what no one can deny is they did get off the island. Whether they survived the crossing in the ocean there, we don't know. But they did escape. And Escape from Alcatraz is a very good film. Okay. This show is dedicated to the late, great Dave Scorpio. Yesterday, I was going to do this show, but I got the news that sadly Dave had passed away. I haven't been in touch with him for a while, but he was one of these people that if he'd have got in contact and wanted to chat, then we'd have had a chat, or likewise myself. But when you're doing shows like this, you're kind of focusing on all these other things that you do. But if you hear that show that we did together, you'll hear why he was such a good broadcaster. In fact, I played a clip on the show, which at the time, I can't believe I fell for, because it was someone trying to insinuate that the Russian invasion of Ukraine was going to damage the banking fraternity. They especially referred to, was it Nathaniel Rothschild? An alleged letter that he did that it... Straight away after I played the clip, Scorpio was onto that, "Well, I don't believe this," which I thought shows that he wasn't the sort of person that you work with that would just rubber stamp anything a host says or plays. He would also always give his own opinion. And of course, those opinions had to be allowable on the show. And he was a very measured and moderate person in his approach, certainly in my dealings with him. And it was a sad loss when he went. I'd heard earlier in the year there'd been rumours on the Mammy's website that he was ill in some way or another, and I didn't really pay it much attention. So it was a shock yesterday, but of course the thing I first thought was, I had heard he was ill, but from what I can understand, Let me bring up a couple of things here. So I'll go to, if you haven't heard it, by all means go to yesterday's ACH archive, Scorpio, The Perfect Operation 3, Goodbye COVID, Hello World War 3. The timing of that show as well, it was when all these sort of lockdowns, vaccine mandates, they all seemed to suddenly come to a grinding halt. And then everyone was trying to get people to put Ukraine flags up in their country. Do you know what I mean? It was very odd. And so it was a good time to do a show. I got notified, I'll read what was sent to me. RIP David Kidwell, aka Scorpio. He passed away Saturday 6th of June 2026 at 59 years old. After a 5 months long struggle in a Los Angeles, California hospital, was in and out of consciousness. Cause of death was heart failure. And then if I go over to this Mammy's website, and I'm not going to give you the URL because I visit this site on a daily basis, but there are some people on there that put what can only be described as Fed posting, or they're just so stupid and idiotic that they just want to put as offensive things up as they possibly can. And I don't want to be seen to be sharing that. But anyway, I can also tell you, because in here, what I will share is if you go to republicbroadcastingarchives.org, you're going to have to go on to, wait for it to load up. I think you probably have to go over to the second page, be even later. You're looking for the June the 9th hour one of the Beyond the Official Narrative with Richard Carey. So it's June the 9th hour one. Richard Carey and Paul in California did the first 20 minutes as a tribute. So they got the news the day before I did. And I would have listened to that had I known that, you know, sometimes they put a little write-up, a little show description. But here they didn't, and so I was unaware of it. Here we are. It just says, Richard is joined by guest Paul in California. Beyond the Official Narrative with Richard Carey, June the 9th, 2026, Hour 1. So they did a nice talk about Scorpio for the first 20 minutes of the show, but I think that was it. They got to the end of the 20 minutes, said, right, now we'll move on to news, and then they went to their first break and I stopped listening. And then the other thing on the Mammy's website, apparently Mike Sledge, let me actually read the post here. There is something. All right, here we are. Mike Sledge is going to have a tribute show for Scorpio very soon, live on his X channel, Tonight Anytime Now. And that was from yesterday, June the 11th. A heads up for everyone. And then someone asked, what is Mike Sledge's X channel called? And it's x.com/infamousmbeep. Infamous M for mother beep. So if you want to check that out, I can't because I did have an X account and I never posted on it for years and years and years and years. It was a Twitter account when I set it up. But I just deleted all social media based upon all the censorship. I thought it was a joke. I was told, someone said you've got, I think on YouTube I had over 3,000 subscribers, was it? And then I think Twitter's followers, I think I had over 1,000 on Twitter. Don't really remember, but someone said, oh, you don't want to get rid of that, that's a lot of people. I thought, well, it didn't sound like a lot to me because you've got these people with millions of followers and things like that. But I just felt somehow unclean being involved with these platforms, if that makes sense, the way that they behave. But consequently, if I try and go in to look at something on X now, I can't look at it unless I sign up for X, which I'm not prepared to do. So there you go. That was what I found on the Scorpio situation. So the only tribute shows I'm aware of are this one, the archive I put up of yesterday's show, which is something I try to do when I'm made aware that someone's passed away who was a guest on the show. I look into my archives, having had over 250 guests on, and put up a show I did with them in their memory, because it's very nice when you get news such as that to listen to their voice. And I found it quite comforting yesterday to listen to that show. I don't generally listen to my own shows, but it seems like Scorpio's still here. And fortunately, with recordings like that, then he'll always be there for people to listen to and for those of you who downloaded the archives over the years. Okay, so let's see what else is going on. Well, what I found of interest in the news since last week's show. So, got a few news links up here. Let's start off, if I can, carrying on the trend of talking about the Daily Mail reporting on things that they didn't used to report on. You've heard these stories about the release of mosquitoes, bacteria-infected mosquitoes. Well, there's a... in America. Well, there's a Google headline, there's a DailyMail.com headline, Google-sponsored mosquitoes, subheadline, outrage as Google plans to release 64 million bacteria-infected mosquitoes in two US states. This must be stopped. So that's the headline. You will know all about it. Apparently, it's going to be released annually across California and Florida, and the aim is apparently to I'll read this quote here. The aim is to reduce populations of disease carrying mosquitoes using what researchers describe as good bugs, males carrying a naturally occurring bacterium called Wolbachia. Male mosquitoes also do not bite. When the infected males mate with wild females, the females still lay eggs, but the eggs fail to develop and hatch, gradually reducing mosquito populations over successive generations. So there it goes on. While the method has been around for decades, many Americans are outraged by the prospect of releasing millions of insects into the wild, some declaring this must be stopped. So there you go. That's not something I'm used to reading in the Daily Mail, but I'm more used to reading in the so-called alternative stroke independent media. So again, is this another example of the Daily Mail publishing articles that I wouldn't associate them with, or have they been publishing them in the past and I've just not seen them? Can't tell you. Then we've got another Daily Mail story. China headline, China's Nostradamus issues chilling warning about Trump's UFO file release. Atrocities are coming. And the important thing for this is at the end of the article. So I need to scroll down to what this guy said. Let me see. So the guy's called Professor Jiang Zhuequin, I think, or I don't know if he's, is he a professor? Might be, might not be, but it's Jiang Zhuequin. It says, the analysts then ventured into more controversial territory, suggesting that some of the world's most ambitious scientific and technological projects may be driven by motives far beyond their publicly stated goals. Pointing to CERN, the European Particle Physics Laboratory that operates the Large Hadron Collider, Yang questioned why governments have spent enormous sums studying subatomic particles. You have to ask yourself, he said, why are they investing $1 trillion to find particles? Yang then referenced long-standing online conspiracy theories, claiming that CERN's experiments are designed to open interdimensional portals rather than simply advance scientific knowledge. He made similar claims about artificial intelligence, citing comments from an anonymous OpenAI employee quoted in a New Yorker article about the company's ambitions. According to Yang, these ideas reflect a broader belief that powerful institutions have long been interested in forces that exist beyond conventional human understanding. He argued that elites throughout history have believed in the existence of supernatural or interdimensional entities and claimed that human consciousness may be capable of interacting with them. Yang further suggested that some conspiracy theories are rooted in the belief that powerful individuals seek hidden knowledge, longevity, and greater influence through contact with such entities, though he offered no evidence to support these claims. So you get a general flavour with this article and the previous article. Well, they'll report on it and then say, yeah, but there's no evidence of it, is there? You know, the mosquitoes, people are jumping up and down about it, but they've been doing it for years and there's been no problem then. So what are you worried about? So that's what I, the interpretation I get from both of these articles. Brad Pitt has been off to the Isle of Man TT races. I believe he did some film recently, something to do with Formula One, was it? I don't watch anything released after 2013, as you know. There are some exceptions. I watched 2018's The Irishman, because it was a Martin Scorsese film, and then I also got Killers of the Flower Moon, Martin Scorsese, and I have to say I was bitterly disappointed, especially considering I had to order a copy from Italy because it wasn't released on Blu-ray over here. But the Isle of Man TT races are quite controversial, because if you go to their Wikipedia page in the incidents and controversies section, if I can speak properly, it says between 1907 and 2023 there have been 156 fatalities during official practices or races on the Snaefell Mountain course, and 269 total fatalities. This number includes the riders killed during the Manx Grand Prix and Clubman TT race series of the late 1940s/50s. In 2016, five riders died on the course during official practices or races. There were six fatalities among competitors in the 1970 and 2022 Isle of Man TTs, making them the two deadliest years in the history of the event. And it talks here about the 2018 course car incident, when an experienced TT rider, because they're on motorbikes or motorbikes and sidecars, all these sorts of things, was seriously injured in a head-on collision with an official course car at Ballacry. The vehicle, which was travelling at high speed, was transporting police officers to the scene of a fatal accident involving Dan Neen. Mercer was unconscious for 5 days and spent 5 months in hospital with multiple injuries. He was among seven riders who had been stopped on the course and instructed by marshals to return to the TT grandstand area in the reverse direction following the red flag stoppage. Immediately after the collision, the organisers amended their procedures so that returning riders would be escorted by motorcycle-mounted travelling marshals at the front and rear. ACU Events, the event organisers, arranged a subsequent, an independent inquiry into the circumstances. But the other problem here is a lot of spectators have been killed watching. I'll give you an example. 2026 Parliament Square incident. And that's this year. 25th of May. Eight spectators were taken to hospital after a rider crashed into people at the exit of Parliament Square in Ramsey during the practice session on the opening day. The spectators were conscious when taken to Noble's Hospital, and two of the injured spectators have been transferred to the UK for specialist medical treatment, and the remaining six spectators, together with the rider, have been discharged from hospital, thankfully. So there you go. See what else I've got here. You might have heard that an actor called Handy. He was stabbed to death, and I saw his face. He's an actor, and he's not a famous actor, but he's one who I recognised. I recognised his face as having a role in, I believe, the first or second season of NYPD Blue. He comes into some sort of conflict with Sipowicz's lieutenant, or inspector, or whatever his supervisor is, and so there's some sort of confrontation he's involved in there. And when I saw his face, of course, I still recognised him as being that guy. It might have been a historic photograph. But apparently he was stabbed by some a girlfriend's son, or the girlfriend's son's been arrested, so that's what they were saying. I'm not sure how the case has developed, but he was 81 years old, and he was found unconscious in his front yard, and that was in California. So there you go, and he passed away. The guy who was booked on suspicion of his murder, he's being held on a $2 million bond, is called Michael Gledhill, and apparently that is the Well, that's the suspect. Is that the girlfriend's son? Well, I think it is. But he also called 911. So there you go. All gets very confusing. Now, there's all this talk about, don't people be offended and we need to arrest you because someone was offended and things like that. Well, there's been a study in the UK. This is a Daily Mail headline. Masturbation in birds is natural, scientists say, with avians often using toys and twigs for self-pleasure. Now, why anyone would want to do a study such as this? And this is presumably, in the article, it's attributed to scientists from the University of Lancashire. And one of them said, Anna Bastow, co-author of the study, and I quote, "There has historically been a lack of research around masturbation in birds like parrots, despite how we're frequently consulted on it as vets." Well, I've had pets, and I don't ever recall asking a vet or my parents asking a vet about them masturbating, for goodness sake. And for me, I wouldn't phone up, because I believe in free speech, but my point is that if you're offended by something like this that wouldn't be talked about when I was a child, it wouldn't be talked about in polite society, you know, morals dictated that you didn't, you know, discuss such things. Why, you know, if there was an illness in birds and there was a scientific study done to try and work out how to prevent this illness from happening, but what is the actual point of a scientific study such as this, apart from lowering the moral tone? And as I say, these are funded. Universities are funded. It might be a private company that's offering specialist funding for this, or it might be a university itself, in which case it's state-funded, so ultimately comes from the taxpayer. And one has to ask why we're paying for stuff like this, and why certain things you're allowed to be offended by and certain things you're not. So for me, when I read something like this, I just think, you know, God judges nations, and I disagree with it, but this nation is going to be judged for lowering the moral tone in such a manner. There's still talk about this super El Nino I've seen in the mainstream media over the last week, and so prepare for what could be. El Nino doesn't just mean that things are hotter over a summer, it increases things like earthquake activity, volcanoes, all sorts of things like hurricanes could all be attributed to an El Nino event. I've got, I think, a DVD box set, Global Catastrophe, something like that. Really cheery soul I am. But there's a whole DVD on the most recent El Nino, which I believe was in the 1990s. And it showed all these different things happening around the world, extreme events such as hurricanes and floods and all these things, which were attributed to the hot summer brought about by an El Nino event. And it supposedly happens every 20 years or so. And they seem to be prepping us for it. It might be genuine. It might be, you know, the heart machine going into overdrive. As I always say on this show, you be the judge. We've then got a headline from the Daily Mail. I'm sorry about this. I have to wait for Daily Mail headlines now to load up. It used to be instant, because now they find it, for some reason best known to themselves, they find it absolutely imperative that they have a video pop up completely unrelated to the article that you're looking at in the bottom right hand corner. And funnily enough, on this occasion, it hasn't actually happened. So that's interesting. But the headline is "Suspended Over Diversity." Subheadline: "Exclusive Christian PCSO." And a PCSO is a police community support officer. And they're basically, they were brought in when I was a police officer. And there was a lot of discontent among police officers because they were referred to as policing on the cheap, because they didn't have to have the full training of a police officer. They didn't have the right to arrest anybody. I do believe they're allowed to detain people for a police officer to arrive who can then do an arrest. But it was called policing on the cheap. That was the sort of soundbite when I was there. But I dealt with some PCSOs that were very good people as well. So it's the basis behind it, not the character of some of the PCSOs, put it that way. It's not their fault if they go for a job and some people think that that job shouldn't have been put out there. It's a bit like when I was on training, there were some of these training officers who were just awful, and they'd have a go at us because, oh, when I was a trainee police officer, I had to do this and I had to do that. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, you also got a lot more money and you had things like police housing, things like that, which we don't have anymore. So you get what you pay for. Okay, so if the standards have been lowered, don't blame us. We didn't lower them. It was, if you want to have a go at something, have a go at the establishment. But of course, you get people like that in every walk of life who just want to have a go at the other people because they wouldn't have the courage to have a go at the establishment. But this takes us back to this article. So the subheadline, Christian PCSO says he was banned from policing after asking Muslim sergeant about Islamism, Gaza and anti-Semitism during safe space diversity training. So essentially, after reading the article, this guy felt that he was on a course, and he felt that he could raise anything on that course and he could say what he wanted in order to air it all out. But it turns out that that's not been the case because he was suspended. And I believe, if I go down to the end of the article, in July 2025, a disciplinary hearing found he had committed gross misconduct and barred him from serving in the police again. But with the help of the Christian Legal Centre, I'm quoting from the article, Mr. Sammons appealed, and last December the panel's decision was overturned. The matter has since been settled without the need for Mr. Sammons to pursue his case before an employment tribunal. He basically now works for a Christian charity supporting the homeless, and he said, I think what I've learned is that as a police officer, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. We need to address this issue so others don't end up in the same situation that I'm in simply for asking questions. Andrea Williams, chief executive of the Christian Legal Centre, which supported the case, said the case should concern everyone. This case exposes how inclusivity training within the police has in practice become a vehicle for enforcing a narrow ideological orthodoxy where only approved views are permitted and lawful questioning is punished. Luke was explicitly invited to speak openly in what was presented as a safe space, only to be suspended, investigated and driven out for doing exactly that. This was not about misconduct, it was about control and driving out any opposing beliefs. This case demands urgent political attention. It reveals a profound failure of leadership and neutrality within public institutions, and it raises serious questions about whether the Home Office and those responsible for police oversight are willing or able to confront the ideological capture that is eroding freedom of belief and expression from within. A spokesman from North Yorkshire Police said, North Yorkshire Police is an inclusive employer and respects the rights of all individuals to their beliefs. The expression of those beliefs must always be with due consideration of respect and courtesy in line with our force values and behaviours framework. There you go. So let's move on to, here's an interesting one. The Jeremy Bamber case. I remember this when I was growing up because I was always interested in, I think I bought my first true crime book. It was called Infamous Murders. It was from Woolworths, was where I got it. It was a big sort of like printer paper size, hardback, and it had some pictures in it and what have you. And I would have been 8 or 9. Always interested in things like that. I remember it had a freaky picture of 10 Willington Place, I think, from the outside, and it looked, I remember looking at that picture, it was all like run down there, how it looked today, and just looking at it sent a shiver down my spine. Now Jeremy Bamber, he was given a whole life sentence for the shotgun murders of his parents, his sister and her twin 6-year-old sons back in 1985. And I remember the case coming out, because that's a big, big thing in America, in the UK, something like this. We don't get these multiple shootings, certainly back then when I was, 12 years old. And originally, they blamed it on the sister, because they said that she had some sort of, she was depressed or what have you. And they said that she had shot all these people and turned the gun herself. And that was how it was in the media. It was sort of like cut and dried. And then suddenly things were popping up about this Jeremy Bamber, that he'd done it. And I recall from the time that, because I found it quite ridiculous that they wouldn't have tried this out, that they worked out that the sister couldn't have shot herself because the gun that she used was too long for her to be able to hold it and pull the trigger, because it was a shotgun, so your arm would have to be long enough to reach the trigger with it pointing to wherever it was she was shot in her body, you see. And so then they looked at Jeremy Bamber before it. And so I always thought that this guy, because the other thing is that there'd been in the media, the mainstream media at the time, allegations. I think he was arrested on his boat and he'd been sort of flaunting his wealth just, you know, very shortly after his parents and family had been killed. And I think there was even a girlfriend, something like that, that might have raised something with the police, that something like this had gone on. But when I look upon it now, certainly it seemed in the media that this guy was guilty. And it makes me think about the way that they do trials today. Because in the past, you would be put on trial for the offence, a specific offence, and they couldn't say, oh, well, say, for example, it was something to do with something that said, someone had said something that the authorities don't like. In the past, they couldn't say, oh, well, this person had this book in his house, and that shows things that we're against as well. They couldn't say that because that would be deemed prejudicial to the jury. A bit like watching an episode of Law and Order and they keep sort of striking out evidence because that would... How can I put it? You're not allowed to know the previous convictions of a person on trial because that could sway the offender. So if someone is on trial for burglary, and then you suddenly find out at the end of the trial that he's been found guilty of 20 burglaries in the past, then if you knew that beforehand, then you're more likely to jump to the conclusion that he was guilty on this occasion. And before you think, well, it obviously was, well, unfortunately, that's the first person that the police are going to look at. So if they feel that they've got enough, whilst one would think he was probably guilty on his past history, it's a bit like if a... You see these detective programs, police programs on TV, and there's a missing child. And the first thing they look up is registered sex offenders against children in the area. And they look at them first. So there could be situations in which someone is deemed to be guilty of such a crime based on their past history, when actually it was just lazy police work that went for them and saw what they could against them. I mean, I'm amazed when I see stories of people trying to prove the innocence of somebody and prosecutors 10, 15 years later trying to prevent new evidence from being raised when the evidence clearly shows that this person was not guilty. You know, if I was one of these prosecutors, I would hate the idea that someone that I'd been involved in getting sentenced and jailed was innocent. I'd welcome the new evidence because that would be how I would feel. But there are people out there that seem to value that they're more concerned about their own career history and not being proven wrong than the fact that they might have been wrong and someone's suffering as a result. So essentially what this article from the Daily Mail is about is a mysterious 999 call. And apparently there was a 999 call from someone in the house that they haven't been able to trace. Excuse me, that they investigated at the time, but didn't pursue it, and now the person who took the 999 call said that there was someone there. The interesting thing is, at that time, Jeremy Bamber was outside being spoken to by the police. So who was that person? So we will just have to see. We've had a recent case of a guy being jailed for rape, and he served about 20 years, and he got released, and the actual rapist has been found guilty and put in prison. And so these things, as I say, they do happen. And it's quite shocking that with all the sort of evidence, I mean, this was pre-DNA, wasn't it? 1985. I remember watching a documentary about the Green River Killer, and they had what could be used as DNA, but not yet. I know it sounds odd, But they have things that they've taken from crime scenes, and basically the DNA technology, the people that did DNA said, the technology is not yet there yet, but in 5 or 10 years, we should be able to get the identity of whatever that is you've got that has something on to link it to who the offender is. And there were officers who felt for many years it was Gary Ridgway, but they didn't have the evidence. And when they finally, the DNA profiling of the science had got to the level where they could send off what whoever had said would probably give them a match 5-10 years down the line, the guy who sent it off went back to the chief investigator and said, we've got the results, who do you think? And the guy said, Gary Ridgway. He said, yeah, you're right. So they did think that all the time, but didn't have enough evidence to proceed. So we'll have to see if this situation, I mean, it'd be dreadful if he's found to have been innocent, because he'd have done 41 years in prison for a crime he didn't commit. We'll just have to see how this case develops. But apparently there's a program called Jeremy Bamber Proof of Innocence, The Missing Phone Call, which is streaming on Five, which I believe is a television channel that when I used to watch the television, it was our fifth free channel in the UK. I say free, you have to pay for a television license, even for a free channel in the UK. So nothing is really free when it comes to television in the UK. And even if you go for Netflix, something like that, you have to have a television license to watch any live video, even YouTube. If it's live, you have to have a TV license in the UK. So I have to be very careful to what I watch. Anything that says a live feed, I don't look at it. I can look at a live feed on a website if it's sort of, you know, 10:18 a.m. update, 10:22 a.m. update, stuff like that. But if they show a video, even if it's Fox News live feed in America, I can't watch that legally in the UK without a television license. And being as I am watched, I have to be very careful. Okay, so I think that's all the news that I had here. Yeah, that's everything. Let's have a quick look at the clock, see where we are. I have got a couple of things to read out here. 37 minutes, let's try and keep it within the hour. So next, the Something For You To Listen To section of the show, in which I tell you about a song, or the song, you can listen to via the YouTube link in the post for this show, which you can find at achshow.com. Today's song is Dire Straits' Badges, Posters, Stickers and T-Shirts, which was originally released as the B-side of the Private Investigation single in 1982. From my research, the only way to get a copy of this song on CD is to buy the 1992 Dire Straits CD single of You and Your Friend that was only released in France and Germany and cost me about £20 a few years back. And here are the lyrics, which, like the music, were written by Mark Knopfler. Just have a drink of water. It's weird how my voice suddenly goes over 6 months after I stopped smoking. I never seemed to have a problem when I was smoking. There you go. So here are the lyrics to Badges, Posters, Stickers and T-Shirts, the B-side of Private Investigations from 1982. Me and my mate, we think you're great. Some we like and some we hate. I know him, I've seen him on the adverts. Got any badges, posters, stickers and T-shirts? You were bloody great last time you come. I thought my head was stuck in the bass drum. Bloody loud, my bloody head hurts. Got any badges, posters, stickers and T-shirts? So how'd you get a start in showbiz? My mate's as good on the drums as he is. My mate thinks I'm bloody cracked. Please sign my jacket on the back. All them badges made of plastic. I think they're great, just fantastic. I'm unemployed, he's still at school. He gets annoyed because I'm such a fool. You don't half sweat a lot up there. Have you got showers in here? You're bloody great, my bloody head hurts. Got any badges, posters, stickers and T-shirts? Come on, mister. Yeah, me and my mate like AC/DC. Hot and sweaty, loud and greasy. My mum says we're a pair of perverts. Got any badges, posters, stickers and T-shirts? Come on, mister. We've hitchhiked here in the pouring rain. Now we've missed the flaming train. Hey, can I have one of them lagers? Thanks very much, mate. Can you have one? A one, a two, a one, two, three, four. I did the Come On Mister twice. It's actually only the second time I thought I'd missed it out, but the second Come On Mister applies. The first one I put in by mistake. Okay, so for me, excuse me, this is probably Dire Straits' most unusual song. I mean, the lyrics I just read to you, can you think of any lyrics that they do like that? But it has always been one of my favourites. Excuse me, I don't know why I'm getting this with my throat. I have had it checked out. There's apparently no problem, so I'll drink of water. Right, I'll try again. So this is, for me, probably Dire Straits' most unusual song, but it has always been one of my very favourites. I used to think it was hard to see where it would have fitted on the Love Over Gold album, as it was quite a humorous track, but then again, so was Industrial Disease, and that made it onto the album. Maybe they didn't want two humorous tracks on a five-track album, but I would argue that Badges, Posters, Stickers and T-shirts was far superior to Private Investigations, which I have never liked, It Never Rains, and the very title track of the album Love Over Gold. But they did what they did, and it was their band and their choice. So now we're going to move on again. The YouTube for this song is in the post for this show at achshow.com. Now for this week's film review. Francis Ford Coppola's Apocalypse Now, originally released in 1979, or rather, the listen to our Paco Lipsch-Nor, 1979 commentary from the Cinema Voice YouTube channel. I had fun and games with this yesterday, as for some reason they have sped Francis Ford Coppola's commentary up, so it sounds like he's on helium. There is a comment in the comment section advising listeners to play this at 0.75 speed, but that didn't help as it preserves the original audio's pitch. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to try playing it to you now. To give you an idea, you'll be able to play about with this yourself because the link will be in the post for this show at achshow.com. Now, one thing I like about it straight away...
I love the opening of Apocalypse Now, but so, in truth, it was a total accident. And I'd
this
like
is Francis Ford Coppola's voice sped up.
I was visiting the editing
room. There's no adverts at the start of it, which is very rare for a YouTube video now. But what you do, so you go to settings,
and
then there's playback speed normal. Now, if I click that, you can drag it. So I'll shut up for a second. It's on normal now, and then I'm going to drag it back. Hold on.
That had photographed the napalm run. There were five or six cameras, and during the part while they were waiting for the napalm, the cameras just
so that's on 0.40, you know?
And then they cut those off,
and now you go back to
the barrel not to be used. And I
one.
Said, oh, let
so you can hear the pitch of his voice, it still sounds like he's on helium. Whereas, generally, if you took a an album, 33 and a third RPM, and you played it on 45, it would sound like Francis Ford Coppola is now. Let's advance him, let's go to 1.5.
So I took this roll of waste garbage film that was going to be thrown away, and I put it in the moviola next to this discarded film, and I played it, and it was essentially the opening that Apocalypse Now has.
This is on
and
2.
An
and you can hear the pitch is the same. So let me go back to my write-up because I did some investigation into this, and it's better if I read what I put together because otherwise I'm going to ramble. So I downloaded the file from one of the many free online YouTube to MP3 converters there are out there, and after much messing about with so-called free programs online, all of which promised much but delivered little, I found a way to do this in my Audacity program. What I'm talking about doing is I'm talking about restoring this sped up audio of Francis Ford Coppola's Apocalypse Now commentary to get it back to how he should sound. So in the Audacity program, I clicked on effect, then pitch and tempo, then change speed and pitch. And after much trial and error, trust me, 0.75 speed is far too slow, despite what the person said in the YouTube comments. I typed 0.85 into the speed multiplier box, and the saved result was a far more accurate representation of Francis Ford Coppola's voice, which I'm familiar with, having listened to many of his audio commentaries. Indeed, I have this actual commentary on my Apocalypse Now Collector's Edition 3-disc box set, but I just thought it would be fun to try and restore this YouTube file to its original state. And incidentally, you'll find a link again to this YouTube video. Listen to Our Apocalypse Noir 1979. That's how they've written it. Commentary in the post for this show at achshow.com. Okay, so let's see what's going on right now in the mainstream media. So we'll have a look at... Do I want to go to... I'll go to Reuters. I don't like... Actually, let's try Fox News. I always get bothered by the pop-ups on Associated Press and on Reuters. So I'll give you the top headline from Fox News. Trump reveals Iran called him directly with one request as US strikes Iran again. So is there anything? I'll click on the headline, see if the request is near the top of the article. But I can't see it here. Oh, I think it just... Yeah, they called him directly to ask the US to stop bombing. Okay, so this is the guy who... Didn't he tell us he ended something like 8 wars? I didn't know there were 8 wars going on. Certainly not 8 that he's been involved in ending. This is the peace president. There you go. Okay, let's go over to the Daily Mail, see what's happening over there right now. So the top headline there... Exclusive graduate son of Karcher jet wash tycoon shot himself dead with an air pistol in front of his father in family's £1.5 million farmhouse after struggling to find first proper job. Inquest hears. I looked at this earlier. He went to a £12,000 per term school in Oxford. Before that, an £8,000 per term school in Banbury. I think it's also in Oxford. Then did a degree in marketing and management at Newcastle University, and apparently he was drunk. He was 25 years old. He had mental health problems, and he picked up an air pistol at the family's home. And his father believes that the death was an accident, but he shot it, and unfortunately that killed him. The headline below is probably more relevant to people listening. Phone kill switch to end trade in stolen mobiles. Apple agrees to major change to render handsets worthless to thieves after Daily Mail campaign. Now, this is so what you see today, isn't it? I talked about morals earlier. There's no, well, maybe we should try and instill moral values that it's wrong to steal from people. It's almost like, well, we're under new morals don't exist anymore, according to the people in control. So what they have to do is they have to find ways of stopping the thefts from happening. So, well, if we can render mobile phones useless after they've been stolen. Well, I was thinking about that and I thought, well, it's a bit like you buy a phone from a network and then you have your, you know, you pay it off over 2 years and then you might find another network that offers you airtime only at a better deal. And then you find that your phone is locked to that network, but you can take it into a shop and they'll unlock it for you. Well, I don't see how Apple or any company would be able to render a phone useless, you know, unless they put the sort of thing in that we're putting those pages in the Middle East. They'd be pretty useless, wouldn't they, after they went off? And you wouldn't put anything past people these days with what goes on in the world, would you? But essentially, what I'm getting at is even if there was something that meant that phone couldn't work, I'm sure that they would find ways to, you know, take parts out the phone and build other phones with them that would work. Something like that. That's the way that I view it. But it's just a shame that you can no longer appeal to people's morality because it no longer seems to exist. So for me, the first thing would be to educate people in the fact that it's wrong to steal from people. But that doesn't seem to have been even brought up in consideration here. It's straightway to how can we make the phones useless so people won't take them anymore, rather than, you know, it's wrong to steal. Something that the Bible teaches us in the first commandments, in the Ten Commandments. I forget which number it is. Okay, so let's go over to BBC News and do their top 10. So this is the most read at the moment. So I'll wait for that to load up and scroll down. So, number 10, which World Cup stars have roots near you? Number 9, facing a seismic by-election, the people of Makerfield tell us what matters to them. For those of you outside of the UK, we have a guy called Andy Burnham, who's the Manchester mayor, the mayor of Manchester. He's a Labour politician. And he wants to challenge Keir Starmer for the leadership. But in order to become the leader of a political party in the UK, you have to be a Member of Parliament. And so what's happened is someone who had a so-called safe seat, which means they won by, I don't know, 20,000 votes in the last election, something like that, in this place called Makerfield, has agreed to stand aside to let Andy Burnham run so that he can become an MP and then challenge Keir Starmer for the leadership. Now, I don't like Keir Starmer, but again, this is being allowed to happen for a reason. I think it would be hilarious if, because there's already been some backlash there with people in Makerfield saying, well, you know, he's only running here because he thinks that we'll elect him. So what if we don't elect him? What if we all vote for a different party? But they've got, I think, Reform and Restore running candidates. So they reckon that they're going to split the vote that could go against him, stuff like that. So it looks like he's going to get in. But when I hear these stories now, I don't think, oh, what a bad leader Starmer is. I think, what is Starmer not doing? Because, you know, the powers that should not be, you've got to be 100% doing what they tell you and be able to present to them what you intend to do for them in the future. Otherwise, you're not their person. So if you're 99% on board, then they're going to look to replace you. That's my opinion based upon what I've seen in my lifetime. So if anyone can demonstrate to me a leader that's come in my lifetime that suddenly promoted free speech and started getting rid of laws restricting what people can and can't say, things like that, allows people a voice and opinion, listens to people, follows the will of the people, things like that, then I'm happy for you to prove me wrong. I want to be proven wrong. I want someone to come in and sort this country out. But historically, no leader in my lifetime has ever done anything that make the country worse. And it doesn't matter what political party they're in. So I can tell you that much as I dislike Tony Blair, Tony Blair's Labour government was better than David Cameron's Conservative government. Because it was before David Cameron's Conservative government, and they were all on the same trajectory to shut people up from saying things. And it just progressively got worse. And now Keir Starmer's Labour government is worse than David Cameron's government, which of course became, you know, all this mishmash of Tories from Boris Johnson, Theresa May to Boris Johnson to the lady who was in for Liz Truss for about a month. And then Rishi Sunak to what we've got now. Okay. Number 8, Trump says he loves the inflation as US prices rise at the fastest rate in 3 years. Number 7, an Everest guide's miraculous survival raises questions for tourism industry. I believe someone was up there doing something and they broke their leg, one of the workers at Everest. It took them 5 days to get down, but they got down and survived. Number six, the furious dispute over what caused Air India Flight 171 to crash. Number 5, US and Iran exchange strikes across the Middle East for second day in a row. The fact that this is only the fifth most read, and some people talk about this being, you know, World War III going on now, just goes to show the apathy towards geopolitics in amongst BBC readers. Number 4, what I just mentioned, Met Police calls on tech firms to make stolen phones unusable. Number 3, second night of unrest and Yes We Kansas, whatever that means. Number 2, Olivia Rodrigo sings about heartbreak, but she's already chosen her wedding song. Again, people find that more interesting than a conflict in the Middle East. And number 1, Ryanair investigated over charging parents to sit with children. Okay. I never like these so-called budget airlines because there's always a little sting in the tail. You get, oh, it's this price, this seat. And then, oh, but you have to pay extra for this. You want to put a suitcase in. Oh, you have to pay extra for that. All these different things. It's not budget if they just give you a price and then all the things you pay for on other airlines that they would include, you end up paying the same because they're not including them in the price. I call that cheating. Okay. Let's move on to, I think we're going to have a look at the alternative media now. What we're going to look at, let's see, let's go to rents.com to start us off. He's got Charles Goyette and Jim Scott in the first couple of hours, who are quite sort of dependable people to listen to. So I'll probably have a listen to that later. His headlines all relating to Iran in this first section. And then it talks about the NDAA bill for merging the United States and Israeli militaries. That even shocked me, to be quite honest, that story that's been floating around. Let's go over to earthnewspaper.com. I believe they're about to publish a new batch every few days. Mark R. Elsis publishes a set of articles. The most recent one was from June the 8th. There's a video at the top there, AI 2027. That's 35 minutes for those of you interested in the AI situation. And below that, there's another video. MIT professor Max Tegmark explains the 12 possible endings for AI. There you go. Let's go over to HalTurnerRadioShow.com. See what's going on over there. So the most recent story is Pakistan has withdrawn as the United States stroke Iran mediator. So that is interesting, because all these so-called peace talks, from what I could understand, were all going through Pakistan, because the Iranians said that they wouldn't talk to the United States. But then Fox News, that article I just referred to, Trump claims that Iran phoned him up and asked him to stop bombing. But then Trump claims a lot of things that Iran say is not true. So it is a little bit worrying if Pakistan have said they're not going to mediate anymore, because if they're not talking, then who's going to resolve this conflict if they're not prepared to talk to each other? It reminds me of the story Brian Wu told me. Brian Wu being a Buddhist teacher, so that means that he knows a lot about Buddhism to the extent he's able to teach others. And there were two main centres of Buddhism in the world, one I think based in Thailand, one based in Sri Lanka. And because there's a fundamental precept of Buddhism that they both disagree on, and the what Buddhists regard as the greatest insult is to ignore one another, they've never been able to resolve their differences because they've been busy ignoring each other for centuries. I've always found that amusing. But that's sort of harmlessly amusing. You don't see Buddhists running around having wars with each other over that. But in this situation, when they're not talking, it's obviously can lead to things that are a lot more serious. So that being said, let's go over to beforeitsnews.com and wrap the show up with the Before It's News top 10. And I think we should get just within the hour mark, or maybe just a little bit over once I've played the closing music. So just waiting for it to load up here. Number 10 went up 6 hours ago, 60 people viewing, beforeitsnews.com. DEFCON ZQ, Josh Reed and Alpha Warrior 61126, Trump and the Q plus comms light up, California voter fraud awakening. Can't believe they're still talking about Q. Have these people never heard of Operation Trust? Number 9 went up 10 hours ago, 71 people viewing, Benjamin Fulford, emergency alert, 6-10-26, 10 days of darkness. Number 8 went up 13 hours ago, 88 people viewing, and we know 6-10-26, the only easy day was yesterday, SEALs, coincidence or silent war. Number 7 went up 7 hours ago, 96 people viewing, news treason, Mike King, full intel drop, 6-11-26, Trump invokes the page dropped, really, really helpful. Trump invokes emergency in the US. Excuse me. Number 6 went up 10 hours ago, 97 people viewing. LiveX22 report, deep state leverage gone. Trump is planning to release the rigged election files, unlike the Epstein files then. Unless you call a load of redactions a release of files. Number 5 went up 3 hours ago, 104 people viewing. Byington bombshell report, Biden, not Biden, all Biden executive orders and pardons null and void. Number 4 went up 6 hours ago, 125 people viewing. Estrianon drop bombshell, 6-11-26, a black swan event. I look at these things, I think these people are all in America, and the it's 6-11 now, it's the 11th of June now. So even if they're in the East Coast, it'd be 5 a.m. So it'd be 4, coming up to 9 a.m. here in the UK. So it'd be come up to 4 a.m. in the US. So are they really broadcasting shows in the early hours of the morning? Or are they trying to make the show look more recent than it is? Okay, number 3 went up 5 hours ago, 132 people viewing. Judy Byington, David Nino Rodriguez and Josh Reed, 6/11/26. EBS and Martial Law set to activate worldwide. Number 2 went up 10 hours ago, 151 people viewing. Juan O'Savin and David Nino Rodriguez, huge intel, a national security emergency next. And number 1 went up 13 hours ago, 165 people viewing. David Nino Rodriguez, EBS is coming, 6/10/26, Trump activates emergency powers. So again, this show is dedicated to the late, great Dave Scorpio. Rest in peace. I want to thank all of you for joining me today on I'm Talking To You, episode 263, Frank Morris, John Anglin and Clarence Anglin, escape from Alcatraz 64 years ago today. There'll be a Bible reading tomorrow. I'll be back with you again next week. And until then, folks, thank you for listening and bye for now.